Blog Talk Radio.
Freemason. I'm your host for the next little while, Dale Graham, and it's a pleasure to have you here in the 250th day of the year. It's coming up to our autumnal equinox, isn't it? The everything specious and wonderful happens as the Earth continues to orbit and tilt on its axis, and thank goodness we have the massive moon to keep that as a steady process, so that the Earth isn't wobbling all over there and going through all kinds of quick changes. Devilish day. I want to talk to you a bit about the function, the way that we approach Freemasonry, and a bit about the way Freemasonry can affect and does affect other people. I'm going to be talking in a couple of weeks about ancient charges and ancient landmarks, and of course it's on my mind to attempt an understanding, to bring an understanding of the nature of Freemasonry to the forefront, because I think a lot of our energy is directed at explaining what is happening and the history of objects and the history of processes. But somehow what escapes is the work, the essence of it all. Do you think the roots of Freemasonry trace back to ancient Egypt? When I'm asked such questions out of the blue, I always find my hasty effort to reply is stumbling. And when I my response is like, it depends on the context of your question, it seems evasive, but I think it's valid. There are more than one area of study in Freemasonry. Just like being asked, is it esoteric? Well, if it's esoteric to your mind, then it is esoteric. What proof do you have? How do you validate that, in other words? I think the energy, the beauty of a statement like that is that there's usually quite a bit of energy and earnestness behind it, as if we are trying to demonstrate in our own mind that we've discovered a fundamental truth about the order. I think I want to encourage that type of thinking, because I think not only do we discover, if you think about it, the fundamentals about Freemasonry, but also that that it's has more than one dimension. There's more than one truth, if you will, that is valid. Valid, is there more than one history of the craft? Well, yeah, I would have to say, if you're looking for the, you know, the giants of Masonic research and study are truly the academics. Hmm? That means, do we have academic or scholarly Freemasons? Well, yes, of course we do. Can we claim that because of our membership in the order? Of course we can't. It's like me going to a doctor's office and declaring that I'm a doctor. The work of it is to always, I think, lift our noses up from the clamor and look around at all of the amazing things that are happening and directed and associated with Freemasonry. There's a lot of, we can always make connections. You know, human beings have that capacity to be able to make connections. But I think, you know, you consider that the order is to help us, to offer us some guideposts to extract applied philosophy. I think, if anything else, a broad brush, if you're asking me about the nature of Freemasonry, I would say that it's applied philosophy. Is that all that it is? Well, of course not. It does have a philosophy, but the application of that is you and I. Don't be mistaken that the search and the clamor for governance is what is defining Freemasonry, and because it's a process that's necessary, but that in itself, of building a book, a meeting, a rank, isn't what germinates all of that. What germinates the seeds of Freemasonry is curiosity. And perhaps today, that curiosity is harder for us to consider that it comes out of ignorance. It wasn't that long ago that the knowledge of the world doubled. It took 150 years for the knowledge of the world to double. And I'm hearing by 2020, it will happen within, what, 72 days? The knowledge of the world will double? Now, think about that. 2020 is just 16 years away. And all of the knowledge around us. Now, I tire of the Luddites and the folks that are wrinkling their nose at the change that's going on. It's always changed. Everything around us, from the time we all drew our first breath, change has been a constant companion. And for the, I think it tends toward, you know, I apologize, but it tends toward a bit of smugness. I think it's when a fellow decides that he's going to grow old, it's in his mind first, and then the rest he just lets go. He accommodates, he compromises constantly, and the more you're able to do that, I think you're swimming against the current, the Masonic current, because the current of Freemasonry is one of aspiration, aspiring to be something that you aren't today, aspiring to be something better tomorrow if you want, to be more thoughtful, to be more considerate. Now, what defines a Mason? Isn't that magic that he discovers in his own temple, in his own mind? It's how he portrays that, how he applies that to the world around him. How a fellow speaks with you about another fellow is how he speaks of you behind your back. If a fellow is enormously critical with others, he's amply more critical of himself. And imagine how lonely and desperate that mind must be to have that bleakness of constant criticism on his shoulder. We apparently use applied philosophy to help us achieve insights. The ideas of behind that are a sense of almost the impossible. What Freemasonry attempts is almost the impossible of predictability. Can we predict the future? Oh, well, let's all grab our zealot religious tapestry and wrap ourselves tightly or pull it over our head and just let one little eye pop out to look at those Freemasons and what they're up to. They're doing the same thing that all people do. What we're trying to predict is how to improve outcomes. Oh, if there's wacky people that will be asking who determines that. Well, we all do. It's a porridge. Not any one idea or any one person. It's a porridge. We are all descended from the same stock, I think is how the line goes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Partakers of the same nature. Yeah. That's in our nature. So think about this in the answer to that. What gives these Freemasons right? Absolutely nothing. If anything, the fundamental act of Freemasonry is humility. We learn that from Pythagoras, don't we? Of course, all of the Masonic scholars that are listening in will already know that. We hear the lamentations of successive Grand Masters about peaks and quarrels. The ills, I'll go out on a limb here. Oh no, I'll do it the gangplank, hands bound, blindfolded in a choppy sea. That the ills of Freemasonry are relatively small, they're minor. Oh my, sky is falling. Yeah. They're relatively minor, and they would disappear if everyone, and in that sense, nothing is absolute, all right? So I'm already taking one extra and added step toward the edge of the plank. If more Freemasons would study the ancient charges and come to an understanding of the landmarks, study to extract meaning from the charges. These are the first lessons to be taught in Freemasonry. A man, I think, needs to do that. A Mason certainly is obliged to do it. We walk around with his charges in our pocket. I guess it's kind of ridiculous to say how many people have you met that have an appreciation of the value and worth of the landmarks and charges. Well, over the years, the emphasis on those things have changed. We've experienced distractions in our own lives, in the life and the history of our culture, of our societies, of the world. Very powerful distractions. Do I need to remind you we're experiencing the 100th anniversary of the First World War? I don't find anything noble about so much sadness and loss. No amount of pomp can shake the horror out of my mind. Oh, don't be so foolish to think that I can approximate what it feels like to watch your mates drowned in a foxhole right next to you. It was, some things should not be spoken, but some things must be said. The accountability for that, I think humanity shares a terrible, terrible legacy. All the men who directed other men to die, all the men and circumstance that came to the conclusion that war was necessary, for what? For what? Didn't resolve anything except the capability of mechanized killing. Until we discovered we were able to kill 170,000 people all at once in one moment, how utterly and profoundly disgusting. That's not what we have become, I hope. However, it is there. It's that part of, I think that's powerful enough distraction to take us off of our applications, our day-to-day kick us out of our day-to-day routine, don't you? What have we lost in the exchange? Perhaps the subtlety, the learning. A great deal of the oral history was lost with those men that died, men and women that were shocked with the amount of destruction that they saw. History stopped. Those people stopped telling the stories. What could you say? There was no way to describe it without reliving it for so many. The noble act? Well, we don't compound it with all these men and women taking their own lives. Hell no. Their silence is profound, and their silence is a constant beacon, a constant reminder, a living lesson that we are capable of tremendous horror, perpetrating heinous acts on our fellow man. The sickness of it all is the way that the masses could gleefully justify that kind of behavior. Have we evolved? Well, I'd say we have. But we are an incomplete work. The lessons of the charges are simply to give us some instruction, a guide, so that each and every generation in each and every lodge doesn't have to relearn the lesson, pay the price. And are we paying the price? Yeah, you know, if we don't remember our history, don't learn from our history, we risk repeating. And I mean unvarnished history. Not the puffed, manipulated, well-groomed history that is served up by politicians and the like. If we don't learn, then we risk repeating it, and my goodness, we are repeating it abundantly. So I don't think I'm telling tales out of school, am I? I think it's around us. Take a look. Always not quite up to our potential. Not even seemingly attempting to reach the potential. We have watered down the experience. we hear sad fellows trying to do this on the cheap. The best and wisest aren't flocking to the doors of Freemasonry anymore. Science, the labs, the universities have their doors open. They've been, you know, trolling for the best and brightest for a long, long time, with no promise other than opportunity. Freemasonry, on the other hand, I think is a parallel that is still trying to get its feet underneath. We have a long, complicated history. And it evolves. Freemasonry is dynamic. And I do sadly challenge, sadly for them, not for me, challenge anyone who would suggest that the best, what defines Freemasonry is in the past. What defines Freemasonry is today. It's how you, whether you are honest with yourself, whether you treat yourself and other people with respect and dignity. That's what defines Freemasonry. If we rely on the adage that Freemasonry is defined historically, that the best of Freemasonry is in the past, then we're on a quick path to irrelevancy. Because there's no application. No application. We applied ourselves before. We don't have to do it again, do we? We have all of this material around us, but we don't have anybody admonishing us to study. And when we come up with questions, to search out a conversation with others, to try and piece together meaning, we don't have that. We've reached an age of maturity where your education and your development, you become the self-learner. And if you don't, you're the fool. It's your responsibility. You walk around saying it's somebody else's responsibility. Well, grow up. You're the one that's losing the opportunity. You're the one that's giving it up. I'm the one that's giving it up if I don't take it. Now let's be a little more generous with ourselves. Do we understand everything the moment that it happens? Of course not. Should we then be generous and say, well, we need time to let some ideas percolate? Of course we do. Of course we do. So how we arrive at, how we make connections, I'm going to demonstrate a little connection here. Very odd connection, but a connection nevertheless. Do you mind? Thank you. You're very kind. And I get around to our first selection of music. This has to do with a very charming young woman who was also the Empress Elizabeth of Austria. And she died by assassination. But bear with me. There's a musical connection out of this. Before her assassination, Elizabeth, she was known as Sisi. You know, one of those little terms of endearment. She enjoyed one of the longest reigns in Austrian history. She was the wife of Emperor Franz Joseph I, and she held the position of Empress of Austria and the Queen of Hungary for 44 years. That was until September 10th, 1898, when she was murdered by a man called Luigi Lecenni. It was a case of the wrong place at the wrong time. And here's what Lecenni said. He said he had nothing against Elizabeth personally, but he was an Italian anarchist, and he simply despised all royalty and wealthy people in general. His intended target was Prince Philip, Duke of Orleans. Unfortunately for everyone, Lecenni arrived too late in Geneva, and he missed his opportunity. So he picked up a newspaper and looked for the next best target in town, who just happened to be Elizabeth. He found out where she was staying, went to the hotel, and waited for her. When Elizabeth came out, Luigi Lucchini approached her and stabbed her in the heart. He then gave himself up. He was quite proud of his actions. He asked to be extradited to Italy and to receive a public execution worthy of a martyr. The government, not quick to do him any favors, denied his request. He then hanged himself in his cell. Incredible, eh? Just incredible. Wrong place at the wrong time. What do you learn? Here's a little George Coleman. Not to like. George Coleman on the piano, Ahmad Jamal. You never know who's going to be a famous man who happens to be a Freemason. Yeah. Does it matter anymore? Of course, it's nice to hear. Steve Wozniak, you know, the co-founder of Apple Computers. Yeah, he was initiated in 1980 at Charity Lodge in number 362 in Campbell, California. He's an interesting guy. He's not a foolish fella. His first computer looked a bit like a wooden cash register, a keyboard, kind of. Well, here's what he said. You have to think offensively and defensively and see where your opponent is going to go. Your mind has to be totally aware of the whole situation. That doesn't come the first time you play. Yeah. Up with the Ringling Brothers. They were Freemasons. They were initiated and passed and raised, all of them, between 1890 and 1891. What did they have? Five of them. Five. They were members of a Baraboo Lodge number 34 in Wisconsin. We're not too sure when this next fellow, Eddie Murphy, we're not too sure when he was initiated. He's a member of North Hollywood Lodge number 542, California. He says, in reality, all men are sculptors, constantly chipping away the unwanted parts of their lives, trying to create a masterpiece. Yeah, I like that, Eddie. John Molson, Molson Canadian. If you're looking at adding a tongue-in-cheek, I guess, to say it's a Masonic connection, it's a beer connection. He's the founder of Molson Brewery. And we're not too sure when he was initiated, but he served as the worshipful master of St. Paul's Lodge between June to December 1791 and from June 1795 to June 1796, May. He's a member at St. Paul's, number 374. Now, you wonder about the connection with the Sax. Antoine Joseph Adolphe Sax, best known as the inventor of the saxophone. There's your Masonic connection, Coleman Porter. Coleman. And he was a member of Loge des Vrais Amis de l'Union. Yeah, but there's not a lot of, lot more than that. The inventor of the Gatling gun, he's a member of Center Lodge, and number 23 in Indianapolis. J.C. Penney, he was initiated on the 18th of April in 1911, and he was passed on the 19th of May 1911, and raised on the 2nd of June 1911 at Wasatch Lodge, number one in Utah. Oh, Samuel Colt, he invented the revolver. And he was a member at St. John's Lodge number four and Pythagoras chapter number 17 and Washington Commandery number one, all in Hartford, Connecticut. Busy and engaging. Frederick Louis Maytag, the inventor of the automatic washing machine. He was initiated on the 23rd of April, 1887. He was passed on May 14th and raised on the 13th of September. He was a member at Newton Lodge number 59 in Newton, Iowa. And you've all heard the introduction to Radio Freemason, the horn, first recorded solo piece by Louis Armstrong. Well, we're not sure when he was initiated, but he was a member of Montgomery Lodge number 18, the Lodge of Montgomery in Prince Hall, New York, New York. Although there was a bit of a controversy, but historians are into it and said Armstrong may have been a member of numerous Masonic groups, but none of them are recognized as by Prince Hall Grand Lodge. Controversy. Still, could make his make that instrument sing, couldn't he? I've been going on too long here. Let's talk a little bit about some things that have relevance to the Mason in you. A nice mellow little sound coming from the sax. One of those incredible sounds that was invented by a Freemason. Oh, that's startling. Remember when we're talking about the things that are Masonic, and perhaps especially when we're talking with each other, it is so important to assume an attitude of humility. Because if we don't, we will come across as arrogant. What we say will come across as hubris. Look at us. We have something you do not. I have something you do not. This was such a despised aspect of human nature that for a time the Romans had a law against hubris. Yeah. Now, does it matter anymore that we have so many people, the nouveau riche particularly, that brag? Always remember this little adage, the old money doesn't have to brag about it or show it. New money, so self-conscious of it, they're always bragging, hubris. At the end of the day, when you're looking for the big man in the crowd, is that the fellow that comes to mind? I bet not. So don't make it an aspect of your character that you emphasize. Oh, it's part of everybody's character, all right. But we don't need to brag about it. Many of the written sources of ancient Egypt. Let's plunge again. Let me take another step toward the end of the plank. And this is getting into the connection of Freemasonry with Egypt. And again, the identification may not be apparent, but we're really searching out ideas, a connection with ideas. To lay claim that they were Masonic ideas, please. But why don't we draw the Masonry in a healthier direction and say we are able to recognize brilliance throughout the millennia, that it's men like us that are drawn toward good ideas. Oh, there will be timid fellows amongst us that will, the sky is falling types, but there also will be bold adventurers who will be searching out new ideas, new information. And those are the people that we respect most of all because they show us they're cutting through the chaff. And remember, if you are going to find satisfaction, if you want true and deep trust and happiness in your life, pull up your socks, boys and girls, if you're out there. Because you have to discover those things in spite of what's going on around you. In spite of it. Those other aspects of life are real. That's life. If you want the satisfaction of a deep and sincere friendship, if you want to be able to trust your fellow man, that's your initiative. Because, you little bugger, you have this brain in your head that's able to join the dots no matter how wacky your idea is. If you were to prove that black is white, we'll find an argument out there, a logic, that will prove it. Is it factual? Oh, hell no. Oh, depends what you mean by black and white. We have the ability to join the dots and justify. As I was saying earlier, human beings were able to justify a nuclear bomb, using a nuclear bomb. If we're capable of that, think about it. Even somebody as illiterate and ignorant as me surely can come up with justifying something wacky. I can't think of it. I try not to be wacky. We don't have to search too far for that. It's all around us. Well, surely when we're talking, we need to moderate that. Look for the best in people. Look for the Mason and the people around you. Not look at him and or her for their apron. Good grief. But the qualities that make a good man a Mason, and the qualities that make a good Mason better, are aspects of human nature. We're not living in a monastery. This is not a monastic existence. We're not navel-gazing and picking lint out of it. Take a look around. If you want to see those things, can you see those in your enemy? As we've heard tell me, call in and tell me who said this. It is easier to forgive your enemy when slighted than to forgive a friend. Who said that? Google that one, eh? So we're going to jump into a bit of a connection of ideas. And this is from some material by Giles Morgan. I've gotten into this material before with you. It's good material, but the search for the roots of Freemasonry, the ideas, you know, I'd have to put some qualifiers, and then I'm good to, this is good as gold. And we're here this morning, we're going to talk about Hermes Trismegistus, the ancient Egyptian demigod from whom the Hermetica are said to come. Now, this is interesting, and in this day and age, 2014, I think this really establishes the esoteric, ethereal nature of Freemasonry. Stretch your brains out there. Just like you take the people that live in that ethereal cloud and have to get their feet on the ground and help them to practice, and to become practical men. Take the practical man and help him to develop that insight about things that aren't visual except in the mind's eye. Many of the written sources of ancient Egypt were said to have been produced by the Egyptian demigod Hermes Trismegistus. And he is referred to as the Hermetica. And these writings form the magical education of Egyptian priests. Remember in a day when religion and magic weren't carefully divided. Now, I'm not talking to the people that believe that the world was created is 6,000 years old and that man walked around at the same period as dinosaurs. Dinosaurs were about 75 million years ago. We haven't been around that long. But if you throw away all of that science, then I'm at a loss. And you're absolutely right. Jeez. But this work contains the philosophical idea that the pattern of the universe can be comprehended and understood through a realization that all things are interlinked. So you're a bit of a hermeticist, you say. Did you ever feel that there might be that molecular connection, that energy, that life and death as we know and try and describe it conventionally are ways of trying to come to grips with our time with this energy source that's in us, the energy of life, the energy of thought, and that we borrow, because the energy doesn't dissipate. It doesn't just dissolve with us. Energy's not like that. So did you ever ponder the connection between you and me and what we are and the molecules and those 10 million neutrinos that are blowing through your eyes in the seconds that it took me to say that sentence? 10 million neutrinos. Put your hand out in front of you, pouring through the earth and through us. The connections. So this is in our minds. You know, the thought experiments. Einstein used them to great advantage. Schrodinger's cat. Really interesting. Can something actually exist in two different states at the same time? Well, no. But an exercise for the mind. The text of the Emerald Tablet. So remember, this is the idea that everything can be comprehended and understood through a realization, if we think about the links. The text of the Emerald Tablet states that the wisdom of the whole universe is divided into three sections: astrology, alchemy, and thurgy, or supernatural magic. That last one is really an interesting spelling, so Google this one, T-H-E-U-R-G-Y. Hermetic thought, it need not be restricted to any one particular religion and need not necessarily be viewed as constituting a religion in itself. A claim that is also made of Freemasonry. Yeah, fair enough there. Fair enough, Mr. Morgan. It is therefore a philosophical system for spiritual development that can be combined with religions such as Islam, Judaism, or Christianity. The idea of the Hermetica as a philosophical system for spiritual development can be blended with religions. No argument. Now we scratch our head and say, how does that occur? The Rosicrucian movement, originating in the 17th century and based on Christianity, was influenced by Hermetic thought and, it has been argued, had a significant impact on the development of Freemasonry. Again, another inch closer to the edge of the plank, Dale. Within the structure of the Masonic Scottish Rite, the 18th degree is referred to as that of the Knight of the Rose Croix. There you go, Rosicrucian. A link has been claimed between the Greek mathematician and philosopher Pythagoras and the roots of Freemasonry. I like this one myself, just because Pythagoras, I mean, after his death, his colleges were destroyed. But interesting ideas, you know, the mathematician, the philosopher, at a school. Pythagoras was born on the Greek island of Samos, close to what is now the coastline of Turkey. And in the 6th century BC, founded his own secret religious and scientific society, the Pythagoreans, which may have been based on the cult of Orpheus. Pythagoreans believed in the transmigration of the human soul, life will go somewhere else, and practiced rituals of purification similar to those found among the Orphics. The Pythagoreans used the symbol of the pentagram as both a motif of health and knowledge and during initiation rites. The same pentagram device is also used within Freemasonry during initiation ceremonies and can also be found as a design among the so-called jewels or badges of office that masters or grandmasters of Masonry are entitled to wear. Pythagorean. Amazing, isn't it? The things you can find out if you care to look. Again, another step toward the roots, more ideas. Hermetica, Pythagorean. Now let's take a look at the Gnostic Gospels and how many of us have read the Hiram Key. I remember very early on when I was a newly amazed, a fellow came up to me and said, you know, these are must-read books. I didn't know that, you know, I know these fellows go on their separate ways as writers, I think. But now they're moving on in a more, I think, writing in a more authentic, with a more authentic scientific rigor. Because at the time when I read the Hiram Key, there were big gaps in logic. They were making suppositions that really weren't supported by the facts. Nevertheless, they were making some interesting statements. And when you're new to Freemasonry, it was like pablum. You know, you start off, you don't give an infant a steak to chew on. You give them something that's easily digested. And the Hiram Key is easily digested. And in it, they argue that the Gnostic thought may have played an important part in Masonic development. And the term they talked about was Gnostic. And it's usually applied to a body of early Christian writings that diverge from the teachings of the New Testament. As they are, you know, it's like one of those tributaries off to the side. The discovery of preserved early Christian manuscripts in the Dead Sea Scrolls, along with the Gnostic Gospels, has caused considerable debate, about the true nature of Christianity in recent years. Does this bring up the notions of all of that? You know, this was a group that were destroying information about our history, or the Christian history, so as to implant sort of a particular mindset. This is what it is. Yeah, this is a faith that's gone through that a number of times. Somebody doing that for the good, for our benefit. In December 1945, a boy stumbled upon the Gnostic Gospels, and they were in a sealed jar buried in ground close to an Egyptian town called Nag Hammadi. And inside the jar were 52 papyrus scrolls. They were written in a very old language, which we know as Coptic, and they're now thought to date around AD 350 to 400, very, very old. And these texts offered a very different interpretation of the death and resurrection of the prophet, Jesus Christ. And it explains that the living are effectively spiritually dead until they undergo an awakening and then viewed as having been resurrected. See? So, in which the living are spiritually dead until they undergo an awakening, you know, reborn, the awakening, you hear the people use that term, and are then viewed as then they are resurrected. So Knight and Lomas quote from the Gnostic Gospel of Philip, which makes this point. He says, those who say they will die first and then rise are in error. They must receive the resurrection while they live. Oh, they must rise above, hey? Knight and Lomas, the concept of achieving a living resurrection can also be found within the Masonic ceremony of the third degree, showing that a link might exist between Gnostic thought and Freemasonry. Here's a rousing standing ovation for that one. And I think, you know, there's some comfort in that, yeah? Very, very. I think it's a comfortable thought. We're coming up to we're coming up to the end of our show. I want to talk to you about the Essenes and the Mithraism and the Druids. Oh, so the horror. There's so much to do. Anyway, we'll come back to that. It'll be good. Trust me. I've got to thank you very much for tuning in to Radio Freemasonry. Radio Freemason. You can see that I'm trying to refine the format to appeal to as broad an audience as possible without watering down the content. And quite frankly, I know that this isn't something that has appealed to a lot of Freemasons. I can remember doing a talk down in Grimsby, and the room was full of Masons, and the response was just overwhelming. The senior warden could have been washing his car. It was so obvious. Now, I don't know, maybe his dog had died or something quite sinister had happened just before he sat down. But if ever a man wished by his actions to be somewhere else, it was that he couldn't follow two sentences. Now, I don't know. Who am I to say that that's the nature of the fellow? That's my roomy-eyed reaction. What do I know, eh? I hope that you've liked the program today. When you're speaking with people about Freemasonry, whenever you bring it up, remember that that you're speaking from a position of some degree of privilege. Oh, I don't mean that we're competing with the country club. That ship has sailed, gentlemen. But from the position of legitimacy, we have an air about us of authenticity and legitimacy, and we carry ourselves with confidence generally. And when we start to talk, no matter what we're doing, we are being measured as as Freemasonry being uttered and expressed by us, each one of us. So it's important that we are aware that people can see us as elitist, smug. We saw what happened over the Morgan affair and the disastrous cave-in and the implosion around Freemasonry in the upper United States, Northeast United States, pouring out of a time when Freemasons were acting as if they were running the whole show. Oh, and the payback has been continues to this day. As our friend Dr. Steve Bullock pointed out in his interesting book and in his talk at the Sankey lecture a few years ago. Speak with humility. Remember, the people talking to us may not be listening to us, may not be thinking deliberately that we're arrogant. They may not be, because that's rude and confrontive, and frankly, it's quite aggressive. So if we're talking, I don't mean the stupid person that will just chatters away as if they know everything. You know, not talking about the guy that's compensating for something. I'm talking about a Mason that has ability and has some insight. Just be attentive. That a bit of humility goes a long way. After all, wouldn't your schooling in the Pythagoras College have taught you that anyway? The first thing you did when you joined was you made you clam up. You had nothing to offer. So you were expected to conduct your work in silence for 2 years. Oh, before you start to feel hard done by, he was this, and we ask ourselves why, it was to teach, just to hone a particular ability and to teach something. What do you learn when you have forced yourself to be quiet? What do you learn? You become an observer of human nature, don't you? Yep. It's absolutely amazing. It's absolutely amazing. We'll get together again soon. I hope your week progresses. Here's a little Dexter Gordon, Our Man in Paris. Oh, by the way, did you know the saxophone was invented by a Freemason? It's been a pleasure having you here. Let's do it again sometime.
Thank you.